Om Shanti. I started a committed spiritual journey, if you like, when I was 21 years of age. So when Judy says I've grown up, I'm not so sure. I was quite grown up in one sense. But it is true that when I first started learning about these things and started to have some meaningful experiences. I say some because I think experiences of the spiritual nature, when they're deliberate and when you've put some endeavor into those, they become very powerful experiences. But in the beginning, those experiences really come as a gift, because you're innocent and you're not using your left brain so much, and everything comes. So that was my experience in the beginning. But very soon after those experiences, I realized that actually my life had to have a deeper meaning and purpose in terms of supporting others and doing service, if you like. And so I found myself getting involved in the doing very, very quickly after my spiritual experiences. But as time went on, what really became very important to me was that spiritual experiences, I don't really mean anything unless they help me directly in creating a different quality of life. That they improve my, and improve as in not just better, but they become deeply significant and powerful, where the quality of my interactions with others changes, where the quality of my thinking becomes much more powerful and meaningful, where my effectiveness in what I do is not because I'm driven to achieve success and results, but the success and the results that come of what I do is more as a result of the spiritual power and significance, and also this subtle attitude and intention that we develop for a bigger picture and a greater good. Because the intrinsic nature of the human spirit actually is to give, is to share. Because the soul, the spiritual energy, radiates. It emanates. It emanates what it is. And when that is happening so naturally, I have to make sure that what I am as this spiritual being is such that it emanates in a good way, in the right way, that's helpful and supportive to others. And so I see my spiritual practices and my spiritual purposeful endeavors to create that state of being inside myself, so that when I'm acting and interacting with others, what I'm sharing is naturally what I am. Not falsely pretending. And I think that to go in our spiritual journey from knowing, yesterday Daddy spoke about this a little bit, but from knowing to actually living and being takes a lot of courage. And it takes a lot of honesty. Because we've come so far away from who we really are, from what we really are, that we've even forgotten. And I'll tell you something, and that is that in the Brahma Kumaris here, we speak about meditation and we speak about yoga, but there's another word that I suspect you haven't heard. We call it remembrance. So when we don't, you know, when you go to different places or other places for meditation, you might get a technique. Step one, step two, step three, step four. It's great and it's useful and some of us need that. But the reason why we don't always go into it in that way is because what we're saying to you is remember. Remember. Remember, and you only remember what? What you already know. You can't remember what you already don't know. You can't remember what you've already, you can only remember what you've already experienced. And so what we're saying to you as practice in meditation is remember. Remember who you are. Remember what you are. Remember. Remember. Remember your relationship with the Divine, with God. Remember, because it's already there. And in a sense, what we're really doing is providing you with an atmosphere. First, a little bit of a trigger by giving you some information. But otherwise, providing you with an atmosphere, a vibration, and company that you go, ah, I know, this is it, I remember. And so the practice of meditation is that simple. It is so simple, I always think, that we think we can't do it because we're so used to complications. It's much more interesting to do something that's very fascinating and you have to unravel and unpack and kind of get to the bottom of something. But here, actually, it is very, very simple. But what it requires is just keep coming back to that awareness of who I am, who I am. And in doing so, we create an alignment inside ourselves. We create an alignment between what we've experienced and what we know. Now, scientists do research now and discover that actually we operate only 5% from the conscious mind. 95% of our interaction with the world around us is based on our past experiences, past memories. And those memories are not just up here, but those memories are actually even in the cells of our bodies. And actually to bypass that is very, very simple and very, very straightforward. And what is straightforward about it is that when you're practicing soul consciousness, you're going into this pure, clean consciousness that is uninfluenced and untainted by anything, not even your past. And as you go into that state of absolute and total peace, that state of cleanliness and purity, then that vibration and energy creates an alignment within your own physical body and the memory that is there of the past, what I would now just describe as negative experiences, you can actually bypass those experiences and come to the original state of your experience. Or of your being, which is very simply peace, love, purity, joy, and truth. I know this is what you've been hearing all these days, but the more you hear it, the more you can sense the vibration and the energy of that within yourself. So allow yourself to do that. And that's why for me, my meditation experiences have to translate into my everyday life. Otherwise, they don't mean anything. And that's why I was with some of you in the group that was in the other complex, where spirituality, it's considered on the one hand, we all strive for those experiences and people give time to that, but when they come back to their day-to-day life, everything is back to how it was. And so we recognize that this simple practice of the awareness of the self as a spiritual being, the child of the Supreme Being, with whom I have an eternal relationship. Eternal relationship. That relationship has never gone away. He, she has never ever gone away from me. I went away. Went away as in I, instead of seeing through this third eye, I started to see through this and then I couldn't see. And so, this is the practice of Raj Yoga, the awareness of myself as a spiritual being, to be soul conscious, to remember my own soul conscious practice and awareness, and to remember the Supreme Being, God. And so in this remembrance, I am in my own pure consciousness first of all, and then I bring to myself at the forefront of my mind this pure, unconditional, loving, gentle, soft, subtle energy and being. And as I do that, it's as if two of us become the same. This is the practice of Raj Yoga. And the result of the practice of this Raj Yoga is what we say, we acquire 8 specific powers. In fact, it's not 8, there are probably loads more than that. But these 8 are the powers that we need to use on a daily basis. And these powers, they have to work both ways. One is that I do have to pay attention to what I do around me, but I also, as I practice this simple practice that I already described, as I practice this, they naturally come to me. I naturally become drawn to those. And the first power of this is the power that we describe or speak of as the power to pack up. You can note these 8 powers down because these will help you a lot when you go home. So what are we packing up? And what we're packing really up is creating a life of simplicity. Recognizing that the more clutter I have, the more distraction I have. Let's face it, how many of us have things at home, in our rooms, probably even our handbags, that we haven't used for a long, long time? I was with someone just a couple of weeks ago, in Mexico in fact, and her handbag was so heavy, it was unbelievably heavy. Probably about 5 kilos. And I say to her, what do you have in your bag? And she says, yes, I know, I need to empty my bag out because I carry everything and I don't always use everything that I have in my bag. How many things do you have in your home that you probably haven't even opened for the last 6 months? Probably loads. If you were to go home and declutter and chuck out everything that you haven't used, not 6 months, a year, how many bags of rubbish would you fill? Lots, I reckon. And so first and foremost, when we begin to go inside ourselves, this ability to pack up, as in carry that which is essential with you, and with you not just physically, not in your handbag, but up here, in the form of your knowing, in the form of your thoughts, in the form even of the need that we have of different things. And what I find very powerful here is that, you know, everything is in abundance here. Nothing is lacking, to the point people think that these Brahma Kumaris have a lot of money. It's not about having a lot, but it's about having everything, but not over-identifying with anything. Use everything that you have, but don't get lost in what you own and possess. So this first and foremost, this power to pack up and carry with you in your mind and in your heart and in your life, that which is essential. And naturally what happens is you preserve energy as you do that, so that then you can direct that energy where you need to direct it, where it's useful to direct it. So let's just stop for a moment and ask yourself, how much do you have this ability? And I use the word power, but actually let me retranslate for myself this word power as ability. This ability, same thing, ability, power. Power word is a bit misconstrued in our world and in our minds. We misinterpret it because it's misused as well. But let's say ability, this ability to pack up and collect within yourself that which is essential. How much do you have this ability? And I'd like you to think about it. 10%, 20%, and the way you can measure is to perhaps just travel back home and see all the things that you have that you do not use. When you travel somewhere, what do? You want to carry, you're only allowed 23 kilos in your bag. You make sure you carry only what you need and no more. And so you think about what's going to be useful to me. And so this ability to pack up is essential. And you work with both externally, watching yourself, observing yourself, but internally being very simple. Very, very simple. This allows power and energy to grow inside you. And as you begin to do this, you actually learn the ability to withdraw. So the second power that we speak about is the power to withdraw. But here, it's withdrawing from everything external and going inside. Withdrawing from your senses. So coming into action and interaction, and then going inside, being restful, being quiet, and being centered at the center of the forehead, in the driving seat, on the seat of consciousness. And this ability to withdraw is very essential for spiritual practices. Because otherwise, you know, our eyes are always open. They're always seeing, always absorbing, always taking in sensory information. Mostly, all that is not useful. Sometimes it's useful, but often it isn't. Our ears, you can't block the ears, but the ears are listening to sound, and you can either listen to the sound when you need to, or you just say, okay, I don't need this. That doesn't mean your ears are not shut, but you go inside and sit at the center of your forehead. Take the seat. And these take seconds. You saw Daddy. I've seen Daddy over the years. It's like, you know, what we normally do is we run around. If you think of your life as a circle, and you in the middle of it, the soul in the middle of it, but what we normally do is we run around from one situation, one circumstance to another. And so we're just skirting around on the surface. But the withdrawal means that every time you do something or finish something, can you go inside seconds? I'm not even talking about a minute. Seconds. Come back and do what you have to do. When you finish that, go back in. And I saw Daddy do this. I have to say, it sounds very simple, but I know that for me too, I can't say that I'm an expert at it. But I realize the power of it, because every time I go inside, I become clean. I become clean. Clean from what I did just a few seconds ago, and I'm clean to do what I'm going to do next. I watched Daddy eat. And there was a time when she used to speak, but of late, she doesn't like to speak when she's eating. And if you watch her, you can see that she's eating very, very mindfully. She's aware that she's feeding the body. And as she does this, there is so much power in this simple act of eating because I, yum yum, I like it. Or eating and talking, and eating mindfully. Even now, I'm not eating, but just as I do this, I can sense the change in our atmosphere. So, this ability to withdraw is essential in our life so that I can meditate. And when I can meditate, I can do this too. So let's practice for a moment. I'm just going to speak out some thoughts. Just sit comfortably, relaxed, but alert. Take the seat at the center of your forehead. Keep your eyes open. And as you look out through the eyes, be aware who it is that is looking out. It's the spiritual energy, the soul. And as I sit at the center of the forehead, I become conscious of how easy it is to take the reins in my hands. The reins of all my senses that make me lose myself in the world outside no longer distract me. I hear, but I don't listen. I see, but I don't touch. I don't touch with my hand, and I don't touch with my mind. Because to touch means to lose myself. Seat of consciousness is the driving position. And I drive my life. And each day and each moment and each scene deliberately, but with ease and comfort. And when I finish driving, I come and take the seat again. And the third ability that comes as a result of this is the ability to tolerate. Tolerate situations and circumstances as well as people and their ways of being. We always find ourselves in positions where somebody is doing something that I cannot take. Somebody's being something that I would prefer if they were being something else. Or somebody is behaving in the way that just doesn't work for me. So I become reactive, or I become distant, or I am not able to take that place of being with that situation. So the power of tolerating is the third ability that we acquire as we begin to practice soul consciousness and God consciousness, because the soul returns to its place of abundance. And tolerating also means that people behave in the ways that are not very pleasant always. And when they are behaving that way, throwing stones at me, maybe being negative, what do I do? Can I tolerate? Am I supposed to tolerate that? Or am I supposed to really give back what I get in return? Actually, we have to tolerate, not because they are right, not because it's okay, but it's because I choose not to allow those things to influence me. Because I choose to realize that it's in my hands. Whether they're right or wrong is a second thing, but the first and foremost is that inside my own self, I owe it to myself. In my spiritual consciousness, I am the beautiful, light and truthful being. And as light, actually nothing affects me. The only time it begins to affect me is when I begin to think of myself as this limited, mortal being that always is conditioned by what's happening outside of itself. But the soul is not conditioned. But in fact, even if someone is negative towards me, could I bypass that and actually only share with them what I truly am? These are very high ideas that I'm talking about. And we might think, well, is this really possible? But you have to consider the possibility and its reality and its need in your life. Because when you do that, then you pull out the potential that's inside you. If I reject some of these things, then I close the doors before I've even had the opportunity to see. And so being able to tolerate, not just so that, you know, this I create a pressure cooker situation where I say, it's okay, I can handle this, it's okay, I can handle this, but actually what I'm really doing is suppressing my thoughts and my feelings. This is not tolerating. If I'm suppressing my thoughts and my feelings, then one day, boom, I've put up with this for so long and that's enough. That's not tolerating. And so tolerating can only happen when I see and experience my own beauty and my own truth consistently. When I experience it and I begin to trust it, when I begin to be convinced about it, when I begin to have faith in that, that what is more important is that, and when actually people really experience something from me, it's from that, it's not what I am, might be externally, what I'm clever at, what talents I have. But the real conviction of the deeper inner spiritual self. And so then tolerating is not tolerating. But and I have to tell you again and again that this is a journey. I suppose when I'm speaking about it, it sounds so absolute. And so I'm not expecting to go from here and tomorrow be able to do it. But what I am seeing is that you can consider the possibility of this for yourself. But as you consider this possibility, then you begin to see moment by moment its reality that is so present. The fourth ability that we need in life is to be able to accommodate all sorts of ways and all sorts of circumstances and situation. Everything is never going to be the way you want them to be. You come to India, you don't probably have a proper shower, it's probably just a little drip, or you're having a bucket bath, or the food that you're experiencing, or your hard bed, are the beds hard? Probably quite hard. All of those things, people and their ways of being, cultural differences, it's all very, very different. But to be able to accommodate means to be able to see what's useful to you and discard the rest. Take what works for you in any situation and in any person. Everybody's got good things as well as things that may not be so good according to me. And so to be able to accommodate means to be able to take what works and leave the rest. Not just leave the rest, but actually being able to discard it completely. You know, the ocean is so big, and nowadays, although because our environment is so polluted, it's a bit different, but our ocean is so vast and so deep that if you throw anything into it, it would generally throw out the rubbish with its waves or sit it underneath on the bed of the sea that you don't see anything. Although probably it's not such a good example because nowadays the polluted environment means that our oceans are polluted and everything is everywhere, spoiling everything. So, to be able to accommodate means to be able to work with what you have. To learn the dance of life. Life is a dance. It really is a dance. And when you dance, you don't say, why are they doing that? Why is that move made like that and that move like that? You maneuver yourself, in fact, so that it becomes so pleasurable and joyous. So to be able to accommodate, to be able to dance with life is something that you learn because with the practice of soul consciousness, there is openness. There is this fluidity that comes because you know that nothing is forever. No one is forever and nothing is forever. Everything is always changing. And as it changes, its meaning for you, its relationship with it also changes. And so to be able to accept, to be able to understand, to be able to accommodate in that way makes life much more bearable. Then where are we? Fifth power. Yes, fifth? Fifth power is the power to discern. Discriminate, but not discriminate as in good or bad, or this is good and this is bad and this is right and this is wrong, but being able to discern something for what it is. This is a very powerful thing. No, we're not supposed to be judgmental. in situations and of people, allowing people, giving people permission to be who they are and what they are, is different to seeing something for what it is and not being influenced by it, and working with it in the way that we have to work with it, not rejecting it. For instance, someone has the ability to do a certain task. Do I see their capacity and their potential and work with them to allow them to increase their potential and capacity? Or do I see their inability to do something only right this moment and then give up on them? This is a very interesting thing. How generous is that? To be able to see someone's potential, discern someone's potential. And this discernment can only come if you don't have your own agendas with someone. You know, if you want something, someone to be something what you want them to be, which is very different to seeing what they are capable of, and then encouraging, that's very different. So this practice of cleanliness inside, wiping the slate of your mind clean, this is what we do every day here. Every day when we get up at this ungodly hour, or godly hour, really, what are we doing? Are we mad? What we're really doing at this godly hour is wiping the slate of our minds clean. And this cleanliness allows me to have the ability to discern a situation and its potential, a person and their potential, and work with it accordingly. So let's just talk about, let's just stop for a moment. Look at yourself. As I said, it takes a lot of honesty. Can you see situations in your life or individuals in your life where you push them to be something? Push them. Force them. Or situations that you manipulate. We all do it. To make them be what you want them to be. And you know what? You will never be able to do it. You can facilitate, when you recognize the potential, encourage, but you can never do it by force. So let's just stop for a moment and think about this. What does it mean to have the ability to discern? What must I be? What must my consciousness be? Can you think of a situation in your life right now where you know that if you discern and if you stay clean, there is great power that you bring to someone and something? And Raj Yoga helps us do this. Because what we also learn, actually, is less selfishness. In a state of body consciousness, in a state of my limited self, I am greedy. And I'm thinking about myself first, and then everybody else. But when I'm spiritually in a state of abundance, I'm not greedy. I am generous. And I don't need anything. Then comes the sixth power, the power to judge. But judge as in being clear about what needs to be done and how it needs to be done. And judging not as in, as I said, judging someone and holding that against them, seeing their limitations, good, bad, wrong, right. It's not that kind of judgment. It's discerning and having ability to actually execute what you discern to be correct. That's judgment. That's a judgment we're talking about. We're not passing judgment on what someone is and how someone are, how they should be or could be. We're not passing judgment on anything else outside of ourselves or anyone else. It's not about passing judgment. It's about judging to execute the right thing. And this kind of ability, again, comes naturally with this practice. And then the seventh power, the power to face all situations and all circumstances. Because we understand Raj Yoga practice is not just practicing soul consciousness and God consciousness, but knowing that everything is in life is moving and changing. Everything. And all of us are actors playing a part. Good part. Whatever part it is the right part for each one of us to play. And you know, what is so amazing is that there are so many energies at play. And then we only see this much of it. Just kind of contemplate this scene for a moment. We are here, 200 people from 44 countries. How many miles collectively have all of you traveled to get here? What has it taken in your own life to bring you here? What has it taken in this place here to enable you to be here? Time, people, resources, situations, circumstances, so many energies are, in a sense, conspiring to create this scene right now, right this very minute. And can I sit here and say, not like that, like that, like that, like the other? And so when you understand the deeper significance, this incredible subtle intelligence. I was listening to someone yesterday, a scientist in fact, and the somebody was interviewing him, and he's asking him, because he's talking very spiritual ideas, so the interviewer is asking him, are you spiritual? And his answer was very simple. And his answer was something along the lines of what I'm trying to describe here. He said, there are so many unknown factors, the thousands of neurons in our brain, the cells in our bodies that renew themselves every day, so many things are happening that are not answerable. How can I not be spiritual? There is some intelligence that is at work. And to be able to face situations and circumstances in our lives, we have to understand these secretive, unseen forces that are at work. And that in this, there is greater good. Even though right now it seems like it's not so good. But even this scene that may not feel like a good scene is taking us to a place somewhere significant and important. And with that awareness, one can face situations and difficult circumstances. And those could be related to relationships. Those could be related to one's own physical body. Those could be related to work and finance, anything. But if I can be aware of this secret, then I pull out my own potential and strength and relate to it, relate with it from a place of power instead of subservience and need and dependency. When I look outside and blame and accuse something outside of me to be wrong, I hand over my power to that. So to be able to face, I must stay in my power. And the last but not least, the power to cooperate. Especially this day and age, we all need each other. Each one of us needs each other, but needs not as in the very thing that I've been saying, no subservience and dependence. So not need out of neediness, but need because we are to support each other. We've all ended up here together in the world where we are, and we have to lift ourselves out. And there's a very lovely image that if everyone gives their finger of cooperation, a mountain can be lifted. And at this point in time, specifically, we have to lift this mountain of the world of sorrow and suffering and pain. And we can lift it if we all give our little finger of cooperation. And this cooperation is possible when I'm not going me and me and only me. Me, when it comes to taking spiritual power, that's when I begin to become conscious of the power that's inside me. My source of receiving is from there and from my own spiritual practice. And then my source of giving is from what I have received already. Not, if you give me, then I give you. That's, I scratch your back and you scratch mine. And this is a very iron-aged, you've learned this language, Kali-yugi, selfish way of living. But actually, a spiritual life is a life of unconditional living. But also knowing that actually nothing is unconditional. You know that? Do you know that now? Nothing is unconditional. Everything is conditional. The quirk happens when I create the conditions or I expect the conditions. Life is a flow. What I give out is what comes back to me. And actually, that is the mindset. But when I deliberately say, if I do this, then I'll get that, and when I get that, then I'll do that, and then that will happen, this is conditional. This is not helpful, because then I'm actually depleting. But everything is in abundance. So when you, again, coming back to this practice and the awareness of the self as a soul and the child of God, the abundant being, then that practice, this reprograms our brain, actually. And we need to reprogram our brain. And the only way to reprogram our brain is to keep reminding, keep going into that experiencing, keep practicing. As we keep doing it and the experience builds, then I can look at life in a different way. And I'm in a place of power. A power as in a place where I can sit inside myself and know that actually the world revolves around me. I don't revolve around the world. That's the wrong way around. If I revolve around the world, around life, then I become depleted. But to keep coming back to yourself means the life will revolve around me. So I'll stop here. You've got a few minutes left before the meditation that I would like to do. If anybody has any questions or thoughts that they'd like to share. Everything is crystal clear or as clear as mud. Yeah. I think the microphone is coming. Thank you, Suresh Bhai.
Thank you, Sister Amanda. That was crystal clear. Except the last point I'm struggling with, which you said that the world revolves around me. And actually, that is contrary to often what we are taught, because it appears to be selfish if it's sort of egocentric. Mm-hmm. Can you just perhaps explain that a bit more, please?
You're right. When I say the world revolves around me, and I don't mean it in the selfish way, but I generate, I create, and so it comes back to me. So when I create that which is positive and good and abundant, then that's the only thing that will come around back at me. Not because I'm needy and I'm doing it for that reason, but abundance, generosity, kindness, compassion is what I'm generating. And so life only gives back that to me, gives that back to me, nothing else. And so that's what I mean by life giving to me, revolving around me. Not in a selfish way, but in a qualifying way, if you like. Yeah? Anyone else?
Esther from Spain, thank you very much. I have a bit of difficulty to between the power of tolerance and the power of faith on stand. When I have to tolerate and when to face.
So one thing I would say, don't get caught up in, is it this power, is it that power? This is for us to kind of recognize the different ways in which we can relate to situations. But I think that what we really need to learn to do is to be so quiet and clean inside that the right ability emerges at the right time. But the power to face and the power to tolerate, what is different about it is that, say for instance, the power to face, you know, I'm thinking of an example that I know of. Let's say you have a death of a loved one. Now that you're not going to tolerate, that you have to face, because you realize this is life. I've got to accept that this is life. And that person is gone, and my life must continue. So you're facing a situation of a loss of a loved one, knowing and understanding the bigger picture of life. That their part is over, you shared life for as long as you did, it was an amazing thing, but now they've got to move on, and I've got to get on with life in a different way, without them. So this requires the ability to face, but this is deeper wisdom that you're using at that time. And having used the deeper wisdom, there is inner strength. Whereas tolerating is a bit more like, okay, here's someone giving something negative to me. I recognize that that's the way it is, that's how they are, but I've got to give something positive to them, even so, even though they're being like that. Make sense? There's a question over there in the center.
Sister, all your sessions are very inspiring. I really benefited from all the sessions. But you indicated that, you know, you must not judge others and so on. That is how you handle it. What happens and how do you handle when other people judge you and are not accommodating as well? So you just ignore that or you react, or how do you handle those situations?
You know, it's a good question. It's a big one. And I worked with this for my own self over a long period of time. Because I thought that I was not conditional, but I realized how my inner state of being was so conditional on what was happening outside of me. And what I mean by that is that if everything's going well, if everybody's happy with me, everybody's saying good things about me, I'm okay. But the moment someone criticizes me, or the moment someone has got something negative to say about me, to me or to someone else, it's like I'm agitated inside. And so at a time like that, I have to remind myself of this, that what is more important to me right now? Is it, people will always look at other people and say they're right. Everybody's entitled to their opinion about me, right or wrong. I can't make them have a different opinion because I want them to have a different opinion. So I accept that everybody's different, everybody has their own ways of looking at it, but what forms my inner well-being is my own spiritual practice and my own conviction about my own spiritual truth, not how clever I am, how talented I am, what a position I have, and they shouldn't relate to me like that. None of all that, because all of that is variable and it's changeable. But my own self-worth is based on the fact that I'm a spiritual being, and that is the most important thing. Even if, to begin with, others don't recognize it, but I know that eventually they will. But first and foremost, I have to trust and have confidence in my own spiritual self, which is the most important thing. But as I say, I know this takes a lot of courage, a lot of courage, and a lot of contemplating and really building this inner strength. And you know what? I've been doing this for more than 35 years, but I only realized this a couple of years ago. Because it's very easy to be able to do all the good things outside of yourself and feel good about yourself and think, this is me. But actually, I am not anything. I am not inside anything as a result of what I do outside, how well I do it, how important I am. This is not my inner state of being. And I cannot expect everyone to accept me on that basis, and they will not. Last question, because we should have some meditation.
Muchas gracias, Amanda. He sentido tus exposiciones muy claras y queda muy claro lo que estás expresando. Sin embargo, he tenido una gran inquietud, una gran duda, es entre la relación entre cuerpo y alma. Es decir, me pierdo un poco en cuando se hace la interrelación entre los dos. Me gustaría un poquito que me aclararas eso.
He said, thank you very much for your clear explanation. He understood you and he liked very much your talk, but he has a bit of doubt about the difference between the body and the soul.
Uh-huh.
And he said if you can deeper a little bit more in that different concept.
The relationship between the body. Two. I spoke about it in one of the other small groups that we had, but this relationship is a very powerful relationship between the soul and body. It is so intertwined that almost as if they are one. And the only thing that allows us, can allow us, and will allow us to recognize the difference between the soul and body is practicing soul consciousness and the awareness of myself as this conscient, living, thinking energy. Extremely subtle, but extremely simple and extremely powerful. When I begin to practice this, then I begin to see how my expression of this spiritual being is through the physical body. And we enjoy this relationship. We enjoy this relationship between the soul and the body. We need this support of the physical body. But when that experience changes into consistent sensory experience inside myself, then that relationship between the two becomes one of, as I mentioned already, of dependency and subservience. And that is when we experience pain, sorrow and suffering, and we're not able to develop the inner power and a strong mind that says that's the pain of the body and the pain of the mind is something else. But I can speak about this for hours, but this is the ultimate practice. If you want to understand the relationship between these two, understand yourself as a spiritual being, as a soul. We reside in this body. The soul resides in this body 24/7, however many years that is. And how much time do we give to understanding or taking ourselves into the awareness of ourselves as souls? But the interesting thing is that if you practice soul consciousness 10 minutes, for 10 minutes within 24 hours, then those 23 hours and 50 minutes will be a totally different 23 hours and 50 minutes. Or when you practice those 10 minutes throughout the day, the time when you're not practicing, they will already have an effect. The impact will already be there and it will be completely different. But we can only understand the relationship when we keep practicing, practicing, practicing. And I understand that today, after your next group thing, the afternoon is free. It's your last day. So I recommend that you spend time on your own, alone, reflecting, perhaps even writing, learning, making mental note and note on a piece of paper. What did you learn? Go and sit on a swing. Go and sit in the garden. Just go inside yourself and really be alone with yourself, with the awareness of yourself as a spiritual being. Take this. You've had lots of experiences for the last 5 days, the hospital, the Baba's Rock, solar, everything, all of that. Close the door on that now. Tomorrow you're going home. And tomorrow you want to go with the incredible experience of India, but you also want to go with this deep, deep, deep experience. And you have it once, and that becomes your driving force. So today, in the afternoon, I recommend that you spend time in various different places in solitude, going into the cave of your mind. You know, that's why in the old days the sages and holy men used to go and live in caves to cut themselves off from the world. But it's this cave that we want to go into and realize how incredibly powerful, beautiful you are. You are that, not because of anything else, but because you are. And then bring God into it, and then see how even more incredible and beautiful you are as a spiritual being. Let's have a few minutes of silence together. We've come to the end of our time. Thank you for being here, and all the best for your journey. Sit comfortably and relaxed, but alert. Relaxed and alert means not slouched on your chair, because otherwise it's very easy to go into a relaxation state and we think we're meditating, but actually we're not. There's a big difference between relaxation and meditation. Meditation makes you alert and energizes you. Rest your eyes in one place so that you don't become distracted by what your eyes see. Focus your attention inside yourself. Inside, at the center of the forehead, resides this beautiful, incredibly shiny, loving, sweet, gentle soul. And as you become aware of this, you're already withdrawing from the world around you and becoming centered inside. Centering to a deep place within the soul, but very gentle, soft place, extremely subtle. So that even if I don't notice it, I miss it. And it is in this place that I recognize my true self, generating and radiating this incredible energy of peace. Energy of love as a state of being, not an emotion, but a state of being. As if life and everything else is just perfect as it is. As I see it in that way, I'm able to see and recognize deeper secrets behind everything. I generate my own awareness. Of radiating and sharing to the point that nothing can infiltrate that. Nothing that is negative can infiltrate what I generate. And so has no effect on me. And this gives me the ability to keep myself untainted by the world around me. and maintain a deep sense of clarity. I may lose it from time to time, but that's okay. But I'm committed to this clarity. Each day, each moment, and each situation, I have to remind myself, stay clean, stay clean, stay clean. And it's this cleanliness that allows me to see everything for what it is and offer the best of myself. I learn from the company of God, always giving, always sharing, always giving benefit of the doubt to everything, and so unconditionally accepting life as it is. And when we all learn to do that, we can create a bigger shift and change in our world with the support of our intention and our love. God is always my point of reference, showing me, teaching me that I am in His perfect image, loving, pure, gentle, spiritual energy. Om Shanti.